The Natural Hat Trick, hosted by Luke Lipinski and Craig Morgan.
And Steve Peters.
Welcome into episode 283 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Craig Morgan,
the Natty Hattie.
Oh, wow. And Steve Peters.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm not doing it.
I'm Luke Lipinski.
Craig was trying to be a little more mature to start this one off, so I respect that.
Well, it's all downhill from here then.
I know.
How are we doing, gentlemen? We're spread out across the country, kind of. Not really. I guess Craig's still here. Craig, you're leaving though soon, aren't you? I won't give away when or where, but at some point in the next couple weeks, you're leaving, which means breaking Coyotes news at some point this month.
Yeah, I'll just say it. Yeah, I'm celebrating my anniversary on the Western Slope with my wife and another couple. So yeah, we're leaving tomorrow actually. So something will happen in the next couple of days, of course.
Okay, so I'll prepare for Friday Coyotes news.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I feel like it's an annual thing. We got to start with the Maple Leafs. I feel like we just did this podcast trying to figure out why the Toronto Maple Leafs can't win a playoff series, any playoff series, against a team that is inferior to them. And I know we got comments. I got comments back for calling Montreal a glorified junior team last week. Look, I wanted Montreal to win. I think it's great. But they shouldn't have been in the playoffs. So I'm taking nothing away from what they did. Anytime you come back from down 3-1, that's impressive. But the story in this series is Toronto. Up 3-1, Marner can't score. Matthews doesn't do what he typically does. And they haven't won a series in 17 years, which I know isn't all Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews' fault. But it's been 17 years. You were up 3-1 on a team that was 18th in the NHL. You had the path right there to basically walk to the final four, and they blew it again.
Yeah, I'm bothered by the narrative that Carey Price stole this. He was just so great that, you know, they couldn't overcome him. That's not true. Carey Price was good in this series. He wasn't great. He wasn't game-changing. Toronto just sleepwalked. I'm not sure.
No, you're the writer.
Through six of the nine periods of those last three games, they had nothing going. There was no urgency to their game until the third period of each of those games. It was bizarre to watch. And I know a lot of people are going to look at Matthews and Marner, and there's reason to look at them. I mean, they combined for one goal, although they put up points, but there's a lot more at play here. They lack the depth. They lack the blue line. They lack the goaltending. There are a lot of problems in Toronto, and you can't just go into another offseason and make promises. Oh, we're going to fix it this time. We can't let this happen again. This is year seven of Brendan Shanahan's plan, and they have not won a playoff series. Ownership has to take a really hard look at that plan.
Yeah, the only place I'm going to differ with here, Craig, is I thought at moments Carey Price was outstanding. Did he carry the series? No, but at points he was back to form, and he's the only chance they have against the Winnipeg Jets. If you're Toronto, what the hell do you do now? I honestly don't know. You've changed coaches. You've changed players. This roster coming into this season where they clearly went for it. Dubas, they put on paper, they brought in, you know, you got Foligno, you got Simmons, like you bring in some experienced guys, you got Joe Thornton in, they went for it. So you spent the money, you got the players, and you just, I don't want to say don't show up. You got to find a way. When you put a roster like this and you're up 3-1 and you have two of those games at home, you have to find a way to win. The one question I had as you're watching the games, and you see the Montreal-Toronto series, and then you flip over to virtually any of the other series, and you see the crowd, and you see the impact the crowd has on the home team and potentially that effort in coming back. Do you think if Scotiabank is full, that pushes Toronto over the hump? Do you think that's a difference maker?
Maybe. It was the same for both teams, obviously. Maybe that happens, and we probably shouldn't downplay the loss of John Tavares in this series. That was a critical blow for them as well, but you got to be able to overcome that. And that, like Luke said, they didn't lose to a good team. Montreal's not a good team. They finished 18th in the NHL. I think they lost like 11 more games or 12 more games than they won this season. They were 18th in the overall standings. That's not a good team, and there's no way you're convincing me Montreal's a good team.
No, and the matchup was right. The matchup was right for Toronto. I mean, that was the right matchup. You get enough room for your skilled speed guys to take over. Offensively, they should have bowled over Montreal. They really should have. And Montreal should not have had an answer. And I just sit there either as a – I'm not a Maple Leaf fan, but if I was a Maple Leaf fan, what do you do now? I they've done everything over the last 20 years. They've tried it all. So is it Brendan Shanahan? And here's the point. So someone asked me yesterday, what about Keefe? Is he safe? And I said, you'd have to think so. But they said if Shanahan doesn't move Keefe out, then next year if they're all going. Then it's Keefe, it's Shanahan, it's everybody. So this, if Shanahan moves Keefe out or he moves Dubas out, it buys him a little more time. So is he looking at it, gosh, if I make that, then I can buy myself two more years because I got to work in a new coach and a new GM? Maybe. I just honestly, it's only getting harder next year, though, when the divisions go back to the way they were before. It's only harder for Toronto. This was their year. Everybody knew it. They played like it all season. And for it to fall short, man, that's really disheartening for Maple Leaf fans.
I think you guys just hit on it, too. They can't overcome anything. Like the John Tavares thing, that's a big deal. You're losing one of the better players in the NHL. That's but other teams in the playoffs would overcome that. And honestly, I'm not even sure if he played. Like, there's clearly something more at play. You just faced a Montreal team. Craig, you just rattled off their record. And with all due respect, that was the easiest division in hockey. So I'm not even sure that record would have been that good in another division for Montreal. And Montreal looked like a team that if Toronto ever had the lead on them in that series, the game was over. Like, Montreal's not built to come back. You get a two-goal lead on them, that's pretty much it. Toronto is absolutely built to – they can win games 7-6 if they need to. There's just I think people get a little too hard on the superstars, and it's like, well, how have you not won a Stanley Cup yet? I mean, I remember they were all over Ovechkin when it clearly wasn't his fault most of the time. They were all over Crosby when he already had one that he didn't have two. But we're talking about getting out of the first round. And at some point, it's like, yeah, if Marner and Matthews could have combined for three goals, you win the series. You played seven games against the team with a very good goaltender. But once again, you just have no – that team just has no resiliency. And even with the crowd, I'm not even – normally I would say, yeah, that, you know, that's a disadvantage to not have that. It almost feels like the crowd makes things worse for Toronto, at least in the first round of the playoffs, because they're just such head cases right now.
Yeah, that could be true. With the pressure that city puts on him. But getting back to it, just a couple of things that you brought up. Auston Matthews shot 2.9% in this series. His career shooting percentage is 16.2. So you have those small sample things that you can't figure out. But also, going back to, you know, the idea that this was Toronto's year, I'm not so sure I believe that Toronto was a cup contender. I actually didn't. I thought there were at least four teams in the league better than them all season, and I thought they played in the weakest division. But this wasn't about, for me, winning the cup this year for Toronto. This was about escaping the first round, really escaping that division, which should not have been hard for them with the talent they have on paper. They should have gone to the semifinals, and it would have been a successful season. And now they're all just searching for answers, and I don't know if the answers are there.
Yeah, and I think when I said they went for it, I don't think they're in the echelon of Colorado. They're not a Stanley Cup contender, but you're right. This should have been the team to come out of the North to make it to the Final Four. I think any hockey fan coming into the playoffs, looking at these rosters and how they were playing coming into the playoffs, had to say Toronto's the team. I don't know anybody that said, well, yeah, it's going to be Winnipeg, Montreal. I just don't see it. Yeah. Their path to get to the Final Four is the easiest it is ever going to be. Scratching their heads is going to be an understatement. The media frenzy around this for the next several months is going to be something to watch.
And that would have been a step forward, right? Like, I'm not a Maple Leafs fan, and truth be told, I listened to a lot of Toronto sports radio the last couple of days to really soak in the atmosphere after they lost again in the first round, because it's just entertaining at this point to me. But at least if you make it past Montreal and then Winnipeg, even if you get, you know, lit up by Boston, Colorado, whoever they would have played, Tampa, I guess, like Leafs fans are not going to be happy in the moment, but you can look back in the offseason and going into next year and be like, okay, but we did make some progress. The door was at least open to be like, here, this will set you up for next year. I heard a great point on one of those, on one of the broadcasts the other day. The regular season, we're at that point with Toronto now where it means absolutely nothing. They could go 82-0 next year. Nobody's going to care. And that is that's a weird spot to get in. Like, I remember the Sharks getting there, and not many other teams where it's like, you can't show us anything in the regular season because you can't even win a playoff series when it's handed to you.
So if you're looking at personnel here, would you trade any of the big time players, maybe the big four? Would you look at moving one of them to try and get more help on your blue line? Or are those the guys to build around? Were some of the problems those veterans they brought in that didn't do anything in this series? And then on top of that, another question for you guys. How do you not look at Brendan Shanahan at this point? 7 years, no playoff series wins under his plan. How do you not look at him at this point?
You know, taking all those things into account, 7 years with an unlimited budget, and not just on players. And that's a big part of it. Don't get me wrong. He can spend whatever he wants on players, but they also have the best facilities. They don't spare a dime when it comes to travel, hotel, how they provide an environment for their players. Toronto is the NHL standard in every aspect. There are no excuses. So for this, you have to start again. You're going to have to start pointing at Brendan Shanahan. Now, if you're going to give me Marner or Joe Thornton, we talked about Marner's inability to produce. Joe Thornton had a point. He's -3. I mean, you go down those, you know, Wayne Simmonds, no goals. Foligno, no goals. Like, I don't know what you do. And to me, you're not going to trade Matthews. I don't care. People are going to say it. Hey, what can we get for Matthews? You're going to hear it this summer. Absolutely never, ever, ever going to happen. Mitch Marner, he's still an incredibly dynamic offensive player that can put points on the board. He just didn't during this series. And what you saw, we've talked about it before, when star players are having trouble scoring and being offensive, they try to do more by themselves. And you watch Mitch Marner in that series, turning the puck over consistently was a problem for him because he tried to beat one more guy. I can do this. I can carry it. I'm struggling offensively, so I'm going to carry the puck more. Causing problems. So I think that's hopefully some maturity, and he can improve on that next season. That's how you have to go into it. But I don't know if this older model to surround these guys with was necessarily the plan versus getting those gritty third and fourth line guys that can eat those minutes and defend. I think that type of player versus the players they brought in would be more effective.
So, you know, I've heard it suggested that they'd lose a Mitchell Marner trade, and by and large, I agree with that. But what if you can move a Mitchell Marner for a player like Seth Jones, where you can improve your blue line and get just that elite piece you need back there? Is that something they need to explore? Do they open them? I think they have enough talent up front that maybe they could even do that if they can get a player of that caliber.
I think they're going to look at everything. I think that – because what you're going to see is the media, the radio shows, that it's going to really force them into a lot of corners. And so they'll have to look at everything, and they're going to talk about looking at everything. So is it impossible to see Mitch Marner being traded? Probably not. Matthews, yes. Marner's a maybe.
Yeah, Marner's the one where it's and Seth Jones is an interesting name to bring up because, again, I just kind of enjoy this, watching Toronto kind of melt down every year. But if you are not a Maple Leafs fan, if you're facing the Leafs, I think them going out and making a move for Seth Jones is something that maybe it doesn't make them a better team on paper, but I think they start winning playoff series. I don't know how else to describe that. I mean, Marner has no goals in his last 18 playoff games. So this is not just the like, oh, you know, he had a rough series or maybe he was hurt and we didn't know about it. This is dating back now basically 3 years. He had a good game in the first game of the playoffs 3 years ago, and he hasn't scored a goal since. So either – he's also making $10.5 million a year plus, or somewhere in that range. So I don't think he's the problem, but he is something that if you need to make a change, that's the only guy I would even consider moving when you factor in like the salary of a guy like Nylander and the goal scoring of a guy like Matthews, where you could move something, get some cap relief on a team that needs it, and get some pieces back. I don't think it's his fault, but if you're going to move something, then that's the guy to move. If you're not going to move him, then maybe move them around the lineup or something in the playoffs, because they just kind of seem intent on like, well, no, this will work. It's not working.
Yeah, and it's 10.9 is his cap hit, and that's, I mean, you can say it's not his fault, but when you paid that much money, yeah, you're expected to be a game changer, and he has not been. So, in a way, it is Mitchell Marner's fault.
Yeah, you at least need to be able to put up two goals in a series, right? Yeah. If you're making almost 11 million, and that would have done it. I think, two more goals from Toronto. Granted, the game's changed and everything, but yeah. Montreal just doesn't have the firepower. And let's get into the next series too, because we did do our predictions. We haven't had a show since, because of all the way the first round was staggered this year, but we did, everybody got their predictions in on time. Craig waited till like three games of the Boston series were done to make sure he was going to be right, but we have our predictions. So, very clearly, Montreal and Winnipeg is the one that on paper has the least electricity. Where, how do you guys see this one playing out?
I see it as I call it the sacrificial lamb series. Whoever wins this is going to play Colorado and just get boat raced in the next round. Neither of these teams, I mean, I think Winnipeg has a better chance of competing with Colorado than Montreal does, but I don't see either of these teams winning. The only reason I want to watch this series is because there are two exceptional goaltenders playing in Connor Hellebuyck and Carey Price.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to come down to some great goaltending. I don't think either one of these teams defends very well, so you're going to get to see two goaltenders on display. The one thing about this series that I'll look for is the competitiveness. I mean, this is two teams that can play a little more physical, not necessarily big, but they're a little more physical teams. This could be, I guess it could be fun to watch. I won't tune to it first, but I guess I'm going to go with the upstart Montreal Canadiens to win this series. Ooh. I know. I think Carey Price, they've got some confidence. They've come into awesome confidence beating Toronto. I'm going to go Montreal in six.
Wow. If Montreal wins this series, then they are definitely my candidate for nonlinear progression next season.
It would be a fun story. Like I do like that hockey is more conducive to having a story like this every year where there's a team that looks like they are the worst team in the playoffs and then they can take down the Giant. I'm not going to pick Montreal. Would it shock me if they beat Winnipeg? No, but Winnipeg was actually, to me, pretty impressive against Edmonton. So I'll go Winnipeg at six. And Petey's been talking about Winnipeg all year. I actually think that is a sneaky, dangerous team. Not dangerous in the sense that they could beat Colorado. They have no chance, but at least they should be able to get out of this round.
And before Craig goes, the truth of this is I want to pick Winnipeg. I know the hockey guy in me says Winnipeg is the team that's going to win this series. On paper, they're the better team. I really want to pick Winnipeg. I like Winnipeg. I've talked about them for months. I was wrong so many times in the first round. I feel I'm just going to go away with my common wisdom here. Winnipeg beat them six times out of the nine they played this year. So that's why I'm going with Montreal. I'm going against myself, and that's why I'm making this pick.
It's like that episode of Seinfeld where he goes to Costanza and he's like, if every instinct you've ever had is wrong,
right,
the exact opposite must be right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm just embarrassed at my first round performance.
Well, he's still tied with Craig.
You know, yeah, but
that's thus the embarrassment.
You drop the old Mike Rousseau line. I put all of 2 minutes into it, so I'm not that embarrassed because I don't care about predictions anyway. Yeah, but I did take the Jets in six in this series.
Okay. And just to point out for the listeners, since I didn't tweet this out, the standings and the predictions, Craig, a distant third.
We're talking about the standings this season.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah. They didn't come up last year.
No, I don't remember last year. First round finishes with Craig in a distant third with 4 points. Petey has 4 points in second, and Luke has seven.
I like I get 4 points in second. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's your first year doing this, and Craig is, Yeah. Okay, some of these other...
You won the Luke likes you more tiebreaker.
The series we've all been waiting for, Colorado and Vegas, and there were fireworks right out of the gate. Colorado did to Vegas what I don't really think anybody should be able to do to Vegas, but Colorado, I'm not sure they're ever going to lose a game, is what Toronto should have done to Montreal in Game 5. Just embarrass them, run them off the ice. You have the firepower. But... I still think this series is going to even out a little bit, or Colorado is going to go 16-0 in this playoff.
Yes, because if they do that to Vegas, they are going to go 16-0, because I thought Vegas was one of the four best teams in the league. And wow, that first game was, good God, I did not see that coming. Not at all. By the way, does Philip Grubauer really deserve to be a Vezina Trophy finalist, or does he just play behind a team that, my gosh, I didn't agree with that pick at all.
You know... I looked at the stats before we had this, and Craig, unfortunately, it's a stats-driven league, and he's second in wins. He's second in goals against. He's top five in save percentage. He's tied for first in shutouts. I mean, statistically, you have to include him. Do I think you could substitute almost any other goalie in the entire league and they could put up similar numbers? Probably. I mean, this Colorado team is absolutely impressive, dominating, as long as they stay healthy. And in a UC, when all pieces of the wheel are there, it rolls smooth. You take out one spoke, they could be in trouble if it's the wrong spoke. Kadri, clearly they didn't slow down. But if you take out McKinnon, Landis, Skaga, Rantanen, this will be a different team. If those three stay healthy and you've got Makar playing like he's playing, I mean, they absolutely dominated a team that's another favorite to win the cup. So I'll go back a year ago, Coyote fans walked away from the bubble embarrassed at 7-2. These guys just rolled the Vegas Golden Knights 7-1. Like, so maybe that tempers the Coyote performance in the bubble from a year ago. Maybe.
Yeah.
They do this
thing on Grubauer. I wish GMs vote on this award, by the way. And you mentioned all the stats that they probably looked at. And that's part of what troubles me is they only look at what I consider to be team stats for goaltenders. They don't look at things like goals saved above average.
Yeah.
You could get a deeper look at goaltending and find out that a guy like UC Saros had just a ridiculous season for Nashville and probably deserved to be a finalist. I'm not downplaying the season Grubauer had. He could probably be in the top five. I just don't think he's a finalist. Go ahead.
Who are some of the other names you would have in there? The other finalists are Fleury and Vasilevsky, but some of the other guys that you think
both of those guys would have been in there. I thought Varlamov had a really good season too.
He did. That was the guy I was looking at. The Islanders goaltending, and I don't think it's going to matter against Boston, but I mean, Ilya Sorokin was outstanding all year too when they called on him.
He's another guy that statistically it meets all of those check marks too, and had a great season and helped get his team in there.
So this series, I went with Colorado, I believe, in seven. I obviously meant seven goals per game for Colorado, but I guess I'll stick with the seven game series. I have to think, and honestly, I hope Vegas makes this a series. Look, if Colorado wants to steamroll everybody and win the cup, I don't have a problem with that. Like I said at the start of the playoffs, and even at the end of last year when they lost to Dallas, Nathan MacKinnon sort of had that Sidney Crosby before he won his first cup vibe, and he's the team around him is absolutely just loaded. But I would like to see some drama here at some point with them.
Yeah, I mean, we were so looking forward to this series for so long. This is one of the series that we all tabbed as one we wanted to watch. I would hate to see it end in five with Colorado just dominating, but Colorado may be this good. We'll find out tonight, I think.
And let's see, though. I mean, you're going to come back with Marc-Andre Fleury in game two. I still say, I mean, Lehner ran him through the bubble series last year was great. I didn't like some of those goals. I mean, unbelievable offensive team, but you see those plays happen in behind Lehner. Like, they're passing, he's coming out farther, he's challenging farther, which leaves a lot of room in behind. So those seam plays were there, and they were just tap-ins. You're like, oh, the goalie can't get that. Well, if the goalie's deeper in his net, that's a more defendable play, and I think you'll see that out of Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't expect another 7-1 game. Vegas will be embarrassed and come out hard, but I've got Colorado in sixth.
Ryan Reeves is out, so that's going to play a role in this as well. Curious what you guys thought of that one. To me, I don't know. I don't know about the two games. If I think that's not enough, it's sort of what I expect during the playoffs. The Kadri suspension was probably a little longer than I expected to get based on precedent, but he definitely deserved to be suspended, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, and we'll get into that in just a second. I do think there's an element too of it felt like Robin Lehner was almost kind of. He was put out there to give Fleury a break. They just played a brutal seven-game series, and they just kind of left him in. So I do wonder if he just kind of took a hit for the team there. They did. I mean, they had to go the distance with Minnesota. I think Vegas is going to come back and at least obviously look a lot better than they did in game one. But, Petey, you had Colorado in six. I have Colorado in seven. Craig, what are you thinking?
I had Avs in seven, too. I'm obviously rethinking that, but, yeah.
So the Reeves hit.
We talked about Tom Wilson a few weeks ago with Washington, and I mentioned Reeves at the time. To me, is the only other player in the league that's a dangerous player, that he's out there to hurt people. Like, Kadri's hit at eight games, it's a dirty hit, and he should be suspended 8 games. Again, debatable. Reeves, to me, did the same thing that Wilson did to Buchnevich, shoving his face into the ground and being egregious to a player that didn't have access to his arms and was completely indefensible. So I, absolutely suspendable. I think it was an idiotic play, and I'm afraid when the score gets to be 5-6-7-1 that's the kind of game you're going to get into, because you've got to set some kind of a tone. I know if your team's behind that far, you got to do something. You can't win this game, so let's set a tone for the next game. I talk to people in Vegas, and they always tell me Ryan Reeves is not a dangerous player. He's not a dirty player. He's not a cheap player. But if Coyote fans remember, he's taken two players out for the season in two consecutive years. Mm-hmm. So there's a pattern here. And I think two games, I guess we're going to go along with it. I think you're going to see when this season's over, that department being under scrutiny for the Wilson missed suspension, for the Reeves suspension, Kadri, and so on. I think you're really going to see that department under a magnifying glass when you get to the GM meetings this year. But I didn't like the hit, or not the hit, the scrum, as it were, but they ended up with a 9-minute power play out of it. And you know what? Colorado scores another one. They said, okay, you want to play like that? Here we go again. So as long as your power play is dangerous, it helps prevent teams from playing like that. If your power play is weak, then you can continue to be, rough shot and a little bit tougher after the whistle, because you know you're not going to get punished because your penalty kill can beat their power play. You don't want to put Colorado on the power play. So I would not expect this series to get out of hand because of that incident, because Colorado is going to make you pay for it. And this is way too important, giving up goals to play tough. So I don't think it's going to be a factor as this series goes on.
Yeah, we had at least one question. I know we have a few questions about this hit. We have one that was asking me, like, well, how am I going to defend Ryan Reeves when I get all over Tom Wilson for the stuff? And honestly, my answer is simple. Reeves got suspended. Wilson wouldn't have. I mean, that's my issue. My issue isn't that there aren't other players making dirty plays in the NHL. Petey's probably right that Ryan Reeves is the only other one that you can make a case as doing it consistently. But for the most part, like, there's going to be dirty plays in the NHL, but I feel like the league has done a good job of getting it to the point where, you know, if one guy makes one, we kind of don't hear from him making one for a few years, with the exception of Reeves and Wilson. Wilson does it, in my opinion, 3 times as much as Reeves, but Reeves is the only other guy that's, like, to me, a consistent worry out there. But the difference is Reeves gets suspended, Wilson doesn't. If Wilson did that exact thing, wouldn't have got suspended. How do I know that? We just saw him do it.
Yeah. Agreed.
Carolina and Tampa Bay. Boy, if a team is going to give – well, I think there's a couple teams that could give Colorado a run. Tampa Bay, though, they look every bit as good as the defending Stanley Cup champs should.
Speaking of goaltending, Vasilevsky is dialed in right now. My goodness, he is playing really well. I thought Carolina would maybe give Tampa a little better series. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. They've been tight games, but – Vasilevsky's playing out of his mind right now, and this looks like it's going to be a short series.
Yeah, and you look at a team that can match the offensive firepower of Colorado, it's going to be Tampa. It's the only other team on paper that can put a line over the boards, and you go, oh, goodness, they could score. But the thing that you're getting out of the Lightning that you don't necessarily see out of Colorado is the goaltender's ability to steal a game. I mean, they were outshot 32-15, and they win. Like, Vasilevsky's been unbelievable. We talked about Carey Price, and you say he wasn't a huge factor. Vasilevsky's a huge factor in this game. I think that, you know, Tampa and Colorado is what I want to see as a hockey fan right now. And I think those games, you want to see they're going to be 8-7, but with the goaltending, I honestly don't know what you're going to get, but you're going to get two really, really good offensive hockey teams. And I know we have to point this out, Luke. We picked these series prior to these games because I took Tampa Bay in 5 prior to this. So I don't want to look like you're kind of cheating because they're up 2-0 now. So I picked Tampa in 5 before this got rolling.
No, I will point out, not only did Petey pick Tampa Bay in 5, Petey managed to, like, make the pick while traveling the country, and he still made sure to get the pick in time. So I give Petey all the credit in the world.
I beat Craig, and I was on the road.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, literally. I think I might have been in Albuquerque when I made that pick.
Might have. Everybody makes all their hockey picks.
That's where Bugs Bunny always turned the wrong way, was Albuquerque.
I took the Lightning in 6 in this series. Vincent Trocheck going down is that's not great for Carolina. You look at his stats this year, I think he only had 17 goals only. I mean, that's fine. Man, he is an impact player for Carolina, and he was all season long, too. And if they don't have him, You know, I like I said, like PD just said, I don't want to look too far ahead. Carolina, or rather Tampa and Colorado would be such a compelling Stanley Cup because I do think Colorado has maybe even more firepower, but Tampa has the goaltending. So then Tampa is comfortable playing a 2-1 or a 3-2 game, whereas Colorado might not be. But yeah, I think we all took Tampa, right, Greg? You took them too?
Yeah, I took them in 7, which is also looking stupid. But, you know, it's my year to be an idiot.
Well, you still get a point for the direct team.
Before we leave Vinny Trocheck, how did Florida let him go? Like, Craig, do you recall what the thought process was there? I mean, they're young, they're fast, they're offensive. I still don't understand the move to get him out of Florida. Was it a personal issue with the coaching staff?
Yeah, it was too, and I don't get it either. And to be honest, and I think they had some interest. I don't think the Coyotes pursued him hard enough. That's you're looking for that position above all else. They should have pushed hard to try.
Yeah, and his name came up in the coaches' room, and I at the time I remember saying, "There's no way he's going to leave Florida. There's no way they're letting this guy go. This is the kind of player you build your franchise around. Why would you let him go? Not only is he fast, offensive, and do those things, he's a really good guy that works hard. Like, guys gravitate to him. He can pull the chain a little bit. Like, I still don't understand the move getting him out of Florida. I don't get it. So I don't know if him being out of the lineup for Carolina is a huge blow. So there's no chance this team's coming back and winning this series.
He had 43 points in 47 games this season, Trocheck did, in addition to everything else you guys are saying just about the character guy and the speed guy that he potentially is for your team. Last full season he played was 2017-2018, where he played. I mean, he played 55 games in 18-19, 62, and 19-20. But in 17-18, 75 points. So this is a guy that, I mean, he's already got a track record of producing. And yeah, if they don't have him, yeah, they're
surprising. Chance.
Final series and this one's interesting to me, not because I think the Islanders can win, but Boston is clearly the most improved team over the last 2 months. And if they can get in there, and if anybody's going to take out Colorado or Tampa, it's Boston. I don't know if they can take them both out, but they could certainly cause some problems. They are a well-oiled machine right now.
I am in full agreement. I think they're the only other team out there, unless Vegas rebounds, if they respond. I think Boston is the team to look at as one that can knock off one, maybe not both of those teams. I was surprised they even lost last night. After watching that first period, they were so dominant in the first period. I thought they were going to walk away with that game, but the Islanders find a way. It is amazing. They are a great story. I think they're going to make a series of this more than I initially thought when I took the Bruins in 5. But yeah, Boston's going to come out of this series. And with their additions, this is a team to watch again. As we talked about in the last podcast, they've been doing this for so many years. They've been so consistent for so long. It almost feels like Boston deserves another shot, but it also feels like they're just going to come up bridesmaids again.
You know, when you talk about the Islanders, it's a team that keeps coming at you. I mean, they're deep. They work hard. They can be down by 1-2-3. They're still playing the exact same way as the score tied 0-0. It's a good hockey team that can score goals. Their goaltender's been strong the entire season. The Islanders team is a better team than people give them credit for. They forecheck hard. They're really hard on pucks, and they don't give Boston a lot of room. Boston is just better. They've been there before. They're experienced. They're deeper. They can score many different ways. That is a better hockey team. Rask is playing well. Boston will win the series, but Islanders are not going to give up. And you look at the game last night, just a puck on an errant pass goes off a skate and the game's over. Like, these mistakes in this time of year just can't be made. That's how Toronto got eliminated. They made too many mistakes at the wrong time. Yeah. Boston, I don't think is going to continually do that. I've got Boston in 7, but it's going to be a really tight series.
Jack Campbell gave up a soft goal to start that game 7 with Montreal.
Yeah.
So that didn't help. I was going to ask you in this series, Petey, if you thought, you know, you talked about the Islanders forecheck, and they have an aggressive forecheck and they come hard at you. If Boston has an Achilles heel, in my mind, it's that blue line. I don't think it's that good a blue line. Could that be a way for New York to I don't know if they'll win the series, but that's got to be their thinking, right? Get in on those
defense. For sure. And one of the things you look at when you're playing a team like the Islanders that forecheck so heavily, when you watch them, they will get three forwards below the goal line when they were pursuing the puck on a dumped puck. And when you get three forwards that low, it's imperative that the defenseman can make a play to get it by that forecheck. And if you do, you're going the other way 3-on-2. If you don't, they're going to come right to the net hard. So that is the key to the game. For sure it is. I mean, they pride themselves on that heavy forecheck, and they're one of the heaviest forechecking teams in the league. And it's not heavy meaning they're coming in physically to hit you. It means they're fast enough on the puck to take away all of your passing options on a dumped in puck. So if they can get that turnover, they look to get the puck to the net quickly. Conversely, Boston's defensemen, it almost is an easier play because what we would do when Arizona against the Islanders is it's just a rim. You don't even have to look. Wingers know, get to the wall. The defensemen are going to fire it around the boards. We're going to hard rim it. Even if you do that the first two, three, four times that the Islanders dump the puck in, it's hard rimmed. Well, now you've created the play up high and it's our winger against their defenseman. Okay. So I think what you could see then is the Islanders have to back off on their forecheck because they can't get beat like that all night. Now, if they are able to turn the puck over on Boston's defense, look out. Yeah, that's their key to winning the series, is turning those pucks over below the goal line on the Boston defenseman.
I will continue to bang the pasta drum, too, for some sort of award. The guy hasn't won an award yet. He keeps having monster years. Obviously, if Boston wins the Stanley Cup, he's going to be in heavy consideration for the Conn Smythe, but they are – I don't want to say they're not the most balanced attack we've ever seen, but having those top two lines and guys that can contribute on the other lines are huge as well. But he's already got 5 goals, 5 assists for 10 points in 7 games. And to the point you were making earlier, Craig, I mean, here they are again with this same core, essentially. Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, Tuukka Rask. That group has been there for a while, but what they have done so well is, you know, either brought in prospects and developed them or just gotten pieces from other teams to keep replenishing around that core, which is, in a way, it is admirable because when they won the cup in 2011, didn't they? Yeah. It's been a while. Like, to still be a contender every year.
Yeah, so if we talk, you know, I've got Boston in 7. I think it's going to go tight. But you talk about I think there are 3 teams that are cup contenders right now in the playoffs. That's Tampa, Boston, and I've got Colorado at the top of that list. Yep. But those 3 teams, and you know what's going to happen then? Montreal's going to win the cup. Because that's the way my season's been going. So I just can't get anything right. I'm going to start being a baseball insider.
I'm going to come out and say Montreal is not winning the cup.
Okay.
I'm going to go strong on that one.
And it's I think we all agree. Colorado 1. I would go Colorado 1, Tampa 2, Boston 3. But I do think any of those 3 teams could legitimately win the cup at this point. Petey, you're in luck too because you have a baseball question that somebody sent us. So when we get to questions, you've got a nice baseball question.
And we talk about playoff futility at that point, too.
Reminds to rate and review the show. Craig has in the notes. You can follow us on Twitter, obviously, at the Natty Hattie. Craig, what's your Twitter? Because I always get confused with the country star.
At Craig S. Morgan. I wasn't talking about that, though. I'd like them to follow the Natural Hat Trick podcast.
Okay. Well, you did put in the notes.
Steve Peter's Twitter account as well.
It's coming. Yeah, we'll
see. Here's how you follow Petey on Twitter. Follow everybody. And one of them will be Petey.
He is out there somewhere.
It's just a matter
of using your name, are you?
I'm just waiting for somebody to provoke me enough, and then it'll hit.
Can you give us a clue as to what your Twitter handle is?
No, it's me. It's me. I don't even think you can search it. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. I have email. I got text. I don't get
it. Every Steve Peter's out there today.
Yeah.
Craig, I don't know how you're doing this, but you're crossing stuff off on the notes on my screen as we go. This is brilliant.
I'm just trying to help out here, Luke.
Yeah, this is excellent. All right, well, let's get into the Coyote stuff then. And let's start with the Worlds, just because Connor Garland has taken over for Team USA. It's a very impressive performance by him so far. And U.S. is doing pretty good.
Yeah, 6 straight wins. They finished with the most points of any team. One Group B, they're going to face Slovakia in the first round. But yeah, Connor Garland's had a terrific tournament. He's over a point per game. And that second goal he scored, I know it was Italy, probably the worst team in the tournament, but that was just an unreal goal.
Yeah.
And you know, you guys know I'm doing these postcards from him and Michael Bunting. Well, I talked about that goal with him. If you watch the replay of it, after he strips the Italian player, Garland didn't even see what happened to that player, but that player tries to spin, falls on his you-know-what, And then Garland just puts a filthy move on the goaltender. Well, one of the most interesting parts of that is that he said the ice is just terrible there. So all he was focusing on was just trying to get the puck settled. It didn't look like he had any troubles with that.
No. Yeah, and this is exactly what you hope for out of a player at a tournament like this. So for Coyotes management and coaching staff and the organization, this is what you want a player to go over and achieve at this tournament. One, you want to play meaningful games this time of year. You'd rather them be in the NHL playoffs, but if they're not there, let's play meaningful games this time of year so you get acclimated to playing longer in a season. That's one. Two, taste some success. I mean, the team's success is much higher than the bar was set for this team coming into this tournament. And then you want some individual success, which Connor Garland is clearly having. He's got 8 points through the tournament. He's playing exceptionally well. So he's built his confidence now. This is a great thing for Connor Garland. It's been a great tournament. Now, where does this team end? I mean, they've got the easiest path to get to the finals. You know, they've got to beat Slovakia, and they got Switzerland, Germany in their pool. By no means does that mean they're in the finals, because as you see in this tournament, anything can happen because they're not bringing best on best. Conversely, Michael Bunch's experience with Canada, it's a team that always expects to win. They expect to go into this tournament and be successful, and it isn't happening on the team level. And personally, for Michael Bunting, he's struggling to find his offense. So you get concerned. Goody's played for his team. You hope he has a little bit of success before he comes back to North America.
Yeah, and just going back to Garland for a second, too, I mean, the Team USA roster, when you saw it, and Petey talked about this a couple weeks ago, like, especially with this condensed season, but even just after the grind of a long 82-game season, it's not like for the World Championships, this is not the Olympics, where you get to go pick your all-star team and they all say yes. But when you looked at the U.S.'s roster, and Canada's, too, not as intimidating as you are used to seeing. And for Garland to not only get to experience winning so far over there, but to really kind of be the main guy for Team USA, he's pretty much improved every single year, it feels like, since he broke into the league. Back stateside with the Coyotes, Brian Decord on his way out. Craig, what can you tell us about this?
Well, Brian didn't say much. He said he wanted to focus on his family and his business. It's kind of what I think location was a problem here. The fact that he wasn't stationed locally. He's back in Boston. His stop at goaltending business is there. I'm surprised that it was a problem, though, because they knew that last year when they hired him to, you know, basically be Bill Armstrong's right-hand man. You know, maybe the optics of it just got worse as time wore on here, where they thought, oh, you're making a lot of money, you're not local, so we need to move on from that. But it's not a great look for the front office. This was Bill Armstrong's first hire, a guy that I know he relied on to identify, you know, new hires. He relied on him for budgeting advice. There are a lot of things that Brian Decord did. They have a close relationship. So for Bill Armstrong to lose his right-hand man, that's a tough loss for a guy who isn't surrounded by a lot of hockey minds in the hockey operations department to begin with.
Yeah, I'm going to tread lightly here. I'm on the outside looking in. I'll preface it by saying that I don't know any of these gentlemen personally, so this is definitely not a personal issue. I get concerned when I look at Bill Armstrong as a new GM. He hasn't held that position before, so it's imperative that someone in that position has people around him, one that he trusts, two that he likes their opinion, and three that he can bounce ideas off of. There's no one filling that void right now. There is not an assistant general manager in any role at this team. There's not an assistant general manager handling Tucson. That hockey operations department is so thin, and you're making incredibly major decisions right now, including hiring a new coach and trying to get through your free agency market over the next few months. There's a concern for Coyote fans. Like, where is his sounding board? Like, I've been around general managers for a long time, and they make no mistake, they're decision makers. That's what they do, but they like to talk to people. They like to get opinions. They like to, you know, bounce ideas and players and scenarios and then talk and walk through them. And right now, Bill Armstrong's on an island unto himself, and that's a concern. And I don't know if they're looking at other people quickly to fill that void, but it's something that needs to be addressed because the draft is coming, the expansion draft. There's so many decisions to be made. He just can't do all of that by himself.
Oh, yeah, and the draft lottery is tonight, actually. So by the time people hear this, I guess we will all have seen the Coyotes ping pong ball come up number one and in the league say, oh, but you don't get picked first. Ha-ha. Along those lines, they're still in this coaching search. I mean, is there a timeline? Do you think this affects that timeline at all? Or is this kind of secondary and they just maybe they already have a guy in mind or what?
I'm going to throw out a couple of things here. First of all, I think Lane Lambert is a candidate for this job, and he's still coaching for the Islanders. So they have to wait to contact him. Last I checked, they hadn't contacted the St. Louis Blues about talking to Mike Van Ryan either. So it feels like this thing is delayed a little bit. Another name that I listed initially on my list of potential hires was Jack Capuano, who is coaching the United States at the World Championship right now. So I wonder if he's another guy that they're waiting to talk to. I don't know if he's as high up as some of those other guys, but you never know as these processes go along. So just something else to keep an eye on. He's obviously having some success over there.
Craig, one thing, if you do me a favor, because you're the journalist on the panel, and not saying Luke, I don't mean they are not a journalist, but Craig needs to get this right.
Quote when you said journalist.
Yeah. Is it? No, I've been... to me, when we talk about this assistant coach at the New York Islanders, it's Lambert. We've always said Lane Lambert. I've always heard his name internally in the hockey community as Lane Lambert. When I hear people from the outside, they talk about Lane Lambert. Can you get that defined for me? Is it Lambert or Lambert?
I will. I will find out. I mean, the
internally, it's Lane Lambert.
The French pronunciation is obviously Lambert.
And it's a heck of a lot more fun to say it that way. I get it. But I'm just honestly, we need to know. For the integrity of the show, we want to make sure we get that right. The coaching decision. I know. How about that? Yeah. Craig, I'll have to look that up. So when we talk about the coaches here, I think Craig hit on something. You got to wait for – but they have permission to talk to Jack Capuano now. The only one they can't talk to is Lane Lambert.
Right. But Jack – I mean, Jack's busy, right? So
sure. And the other point that we've talked about on this show several times is they are not – meaning – the Coyotes are not in competition with the coaches that are looking at the Rangers and Seattle jobs. They're in a different market. They've said it publicly. We're looking for someone to grow with the team. We're looking for a younger option. So I don't think they're in competition with those teams. Where you're going to see those teams, that coaching carousel is going to start spinning and stop. I think pretty soon, once you see one team going, hey, we made an offer to so-and-so, those coaching jobs are going to vaporize quickly. I still think the Coyotes are not in a rush because they don't need to be. I'm not sure who they would be competing those candidates. The candidates I read at the Coyotes job, I'm not seeing in Columbus, Seattle, Buffalo. They're not the same guys. So I don't know if the urgency is there. They just want to get it right. And it goes back to being Bill Armstrong's by himself. So maybe they will wait to fill the roles surrounding him before they get into the coaching decision. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. He doesn't even have Shane Doan now to lean on because Shane's over at the World Championship as well. I mean, if you call him, but yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of help for Bill right now. So it's a tough process for him.
And Craig, when you bring that up, and it's funny because I looked at a bunch of different teams on their websites, and I looked at hockey operations and I looked at staffing, and I looked at the Coyotes on their website, their hockey operations department, and Shane Doan's not on that list. He's on the business side. So I don't know if, I'm not sure how involved he is in hockey decisions. I really don't know. Do I think he should be? Do I think he will be? Do I think that's coming? I do. Do I think that's happening today? Is Bill bouncing hockey ideas off Shane Doan? I don't know.
They will tell you that he is, but I'm not convinced that he has a lot of say right now in hockey ops. That may change over time as they gain trust. But yeah, I don't think he has enough, to be honest. I think they need to lean on the guys that they can, because there aren't a lot of them. I mean, they have some people in other roles, right? Whether you're looking at the cap or you're looking at analytics, but you don't have those, you know, those sort of advisors that know the league, know personnel.
Yeah, and that's when you look at these other teams, and I encourage listeners, if they want to do that, go to these teams and look at their front office, and you're going to see advisor to the GM, and you'll see more than one assistant GM, and it's becoming commonplace around the league. So right now, for Bill to be by himself, he does have a cap guy and analytic guy, and those are more administrative roles, though, than they are advisement roles. So I honestly think they'll fill those roles before they fill a coaching role.
When you guys look around the league, you feel pretty confident that these are going to be the teams that need coaches. We're not going to add anybody else. Because, I mean, I know that there was thought maybe if Winnipeg went out in the first round, maybe they would look at something with Paul Maurice. They're obviously still playing. So I think at this point he would be safe. I mean, if Edmonton was going to freak out over Dave Tippett, which I think would be a mistake, they would have already done it, I would assume. Same with Pittsburgh and Mike Sullivan. I mean, are we pretty confident that the teams that need coaches right now, so that's Arizona, Columbus, Seattle, and the Rangers, there's not going to be a fifth?
Well, Buffalo. I throw Buffalo yeah. in that mix, too.
Keep forgetting they're in the league.
I think you're right, Luke. And Pittsburgh was one I was eyeing, and I don't think Edmonton's going to make a change. We talked at the beginning of the show at length about Toronto. Honestly, nothing they do there would surprise me. And that doesn't need to happen today or tomorrow. So Toronto might be in that mix. And I don't know. I keep hearing this underground swell in Florida. I don't know why that Joel Quenneville would be a guy leaving Florida, but I don't believe it. But until he gets the vote of confidence from GM and ownership, I'm going to put him on the edge of the cliff as a guy that might also move on. And part of that, the organization is looking at how much money they owe him over the future, and they might be willing to let him join his old friend Ron Francis in Seattle, potentially.
Yeah. Make a lot of sense.
Seattle and Joel Quenneville becomes available and wants the job. I mean, it's pretty hard to say no to that when you're right. But I mean, they obviously have the Whalers connection as well. Those are old buds there. But if Joel Quenneville becomes available, you have to take a look at that.
Anything else we want to hit here before questions? We got a decent amount of questions. Oh, there's a picture of Eeyore. All right. Craig, anything else you want to hit here?
No, we can go to the questions.
All right. We're going to start with the first one from Eldon. Can Luke, who apparently is Eeyore in this picture, be sequestered anytime the Penguins are discussed on this podcast? How many cups have they won? And it's a picture of Eeyore with a chalkboard nailed to his backside that says the Penguins never win anymore. Look, these jokes are funnier when they're not directed at me, I got to say. There's something to that. I will grant you the Penguins have won two cups since we started this podcast. But for me, it's the predictability at this point. I like my sports to be unpredictable unless it's the Maple Leafs losing in the first round every year. The fact that I know what Pittsburgh's going to do every year now, that's more of my issue. They weren't a cup team this year, even if they got past the Islanders.
Okay, but they can't be a cup team every year.
No.
They can just make the playoffs when they, you know, when they have an era where they win three cups, they continue to make the playoffs at least, which is more than my team can say.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I would point out that your organization does not keep finding new titles for the GM to reward him for not making the playoffs.
Wow.
You need your bell. We got to get that bell back from the studio.
I'm not sure how it would sound on these, though. It might not sound so great.
You need to get that Liberty Bell you have in your house that when you ring it, like villagers come running out of their homes. Cheryl. Craig mentioned in his recent Neutral Zone column that Corey Schwab's contract expires at the end of June. Is the expectation he'll be re-signed, or is that going to be up to the incoming coach, assuming they are hired by then?
Well, it is generally up to the incoming coach. What I have been told is all the assistants have been told that they're free to pursue other options, and nothing about their future will be determined before the Coyotes hire a new coach. So, to me, read the writing on the wall, right?
Yeah, and with Corey Schwab specifically, I think if Brian Decord was still here, and he is not, Brian Decord's a goalie guy, a goalie guru, as it were, and Zach Burke has left the organization, they're really, now with Decord gone, there really is no foundation for goaltending here with this organization. I won't say it's impossible for Corey Schwab to come back here, especially if they bring in a young coach from a different, you know, potentially a junior coach that comes in here, or even an assistant coach in the NHL that doesn't necessarily have his guy. The goalies here in Arizona are comfortable with Corey Schwab. They know him. It's not out of the realm of possibility that he could come back. But if you get to a guy that has, again, his guy, then Corey Schwab will be moving on. And I think Corey Schwab's been an excellent development goalie coach here for this organization. You look at how the steps that Prosvetov and Hill have had underneath his, you know, mentorship. I think there's a lot of good things that he's done here. So we'll see what direction that goaltending goes in the upcoming weeks.
Todd asks about the Reeves suspension. We already got into that, but we appreciate the question, Todd. Here's one, PD, from somebody named Greg Dillard. And he said, what are Steve's thoughts on the 22-31 Minnesota Twins? Although, to be fair, I wanted to double check because Minnesota has played since this question. They're actually 22-32 now.
Yeah, they won one, lost one to the Orioles. So, yeah, this kind of falls into your Penguins talk. I can't say I'm a fan of any NHL team. I don't think that's appropriate for me to do. I won't ever say that on here. I am a fan of the Minnesota Twins, a team that was expected to challenge for the Central, and they have been red rotten, and they are one of the worst teams in baseball, and it's frustrating the hell out of me. And not only that, we talked about playoff futility. They are the worst team in professional sports in the playoffs. They've lost 18 straight playoff games, 16 of those to the Yankees. So I cannot begin to tell you, one, how much I dislike the Yankees, but two, how angry I am at the start, knowing now we're in, I don't even know what month it is, June, and it's over. As a baseball fan, to be June 2nd and be done and out, it's just absolutely disheartening.
Who is this Greg Dillard fellow?
I know. I'm getting grief from Coyotes PR. That's unbelievable to me. And part of it is there's a Cleveland Indian fan in that circle. So that's where I think the disdain is coming from on the Minnesota Twins.
Well, I thought that was a good question, and I encourage Greg to tweet in with more questions in the future like that.
Absolutely.
Keep an eye on the Twins.
As long as they're not directed at Luke.
No. Yeah, no, keep those away from me. Adam writes in, what is the worst feeling, having championship aspirations and seeing them crushed in spectacular fashion, or not having any championship prospects at all? My Leafs friend and I are debating.
This is a terrific question, actually. I've gone back and forth, and I honestly can't decide, because to get to the very edge, which I have been several times as a Chicago sports fan, and then to have it taken away, that's a really painful experience. I think it's a different kind of pain, because you're so close to exhilaration, and then it just gets swept out from under you, versus this just long, steady depression that you feel when you have a team that never makes it to the playoffs even.
Yeah, you're right. And I think when you look back at a team and your team has those playoff aspirations and they're there, you can look back on it a little more fondly than your team being mediocre all the time. You know, you've had that buildup. You've had that excitement. Even though you didn't win, you've had something. But you're right, Greg. That instant moment when your team, you're the Toronto Maple Leaf fan the next morning, I don't know if it gets any worse than that as a sports fan versus a team that's been a last all season. It's absolutely miserable to watch for 82 games, but at least you don't get those highs and lows. You're here. You suck. You're in, you know, you're in that for the entire season. So I think for me, I still want to say, hey, I had a shot at it. I was there. I'll always take a playoff game. I will always try to win the division. I just think you have to still aspire to winning. So I'll say I'd much rather be a team that's supposed to win that gets there and loses.
I will completely agree with that, with the caveat of, if the question is like, would you rather be a team in a 3 or 4 or 5 year rebuild, but you are actually actively trying to rebuild, as opposed to the Maple Leafs, who, like I said earlier, none of their games mean anything now until their first elimination game next year's playoffs. Like, they are definitely a playoff team over 82 games, and especially the way the regular season is played compared to the playoffs. But none of those games mean anything. Whereas at least if you're a rebuilding team and then you have a prospect kind of pop up, and then you kind of find some signs of hope. Whereas Toronto has about 360-ish days before their next meaningful hockey game. And if they lose that one again, it's just more of the same. Calum writes in, does his recent success change the Coyotes' view of Liam Kirk? I feel like Craig gets one Liam Kirk question every week.
Look, he had a terrific world championship. Good for him. And even though it's against lesser competition, fine. You know, he still had, I think he led the tournament, didn't he, in goals? So that's an accomplishment. Having said that, no, this is a different stage. And when you talk to scouts, when you talk to people who dissect players' games for a living, they will tell you there are a lot of areas of his game that need to change. He's also 22, so he's a lot farther along the progression for a prospect than some of these younger guys. So, you know, he's got one more year. The Coyotes have his rights for one more year. I don't expect them to sign him to an ELC. I think the prevailing sentiment around the scouting world is that he's not ready. He's not an NHL prospect yet. He's got one more year, I guess, to get there.
This is a good one from Coach East Jack. We're going to play a game with this. He says, is it possible Matthews could muscle his way out of Toronto like Eichel is doing in Buffalo? So, guys, let's play this game. Let's take Matthews, McDavid, and Eichel, and let's say the year is 2025. Which one is most to least likely to still be on their current team?
I'd say Eichel's least likely.
Yeah, he might be gone by the end of this podcast.
Abbott Austin in the middle, and Connor McDavid is going to be an Oiler.
Okay. So do you say Connor McDavid is going to be an Oiler just within the context of this game, or do you genuinely feel like he's playing his whole career in Edmonton?
Well, they're not trading him. Okay. They're not going to trade him.
How likely do you think it is that Matthews is still with Toronto after this deal is up? Because that, I believe, what does that go through? Pull that up. It goes through years. 24. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think it's as crazy as some people think that he might leave. I think there's a pretty fair possibility that he'll leave Toronto after these 3 years. Listen, a lot can change between now and then. So you have to remember that. A lot can alter that. But right now, as we sit, I don't think it's crazy to think about Austin Matthews leaving Toronto after 3 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's, you know, do I put him in Coyote Brick Red right now? What is it? Brick Red, Craig? What's the official term? I don't know. Whatever the official red is of the Coyotes.
I think
that when he gets the opportunity to make his own decisions, he'd love to play in Arizona. Believe me, he loves Arizona. But I've been around professional athletes enough to know that when they say it's not about the money where I go, it's about the money where I go. So unless this team is willing to back up the Brinks truck, he won't play here because he's going to make whatever he wants to make on the open market, and he will go somewhere else. Not necessarily Toronto, although to Craig's point, if next year they win the Stanley Cup with him on the team and they were willing to pay him, he'll be there for a long time. If they lose again and he's frustrated and taking the brunt and the blame from the media and the fan base, he's getting the heck out of Toronto. Absolutely, for sure. But he's going to go make his money.
Yep.
That was my next question. Petey just answered it. Like, over these next 3 years, is it more or less likely he leaves if Toronto wins a cup, or if it just continues to be this flame out every year? And maybe not in the first round, but like, what if the third year that's left in that contract, they're finally winning a couple playoff series and they get to the second or third round? Does that entice him to come back? Or is it like, okay, look, I've given it a try here for, at that point, like the better part of a decade, I want to go somewhere else. But honestly, at the end of the day, money.
For sure.
Make plus that much money.
If you're in Toronto, you're at the center of the hockey universe. Like, people don't, hockey fans here that have grown up in Arizona like hockey, you go to Toronto and everybody knows what's going on with Toronto Maple Leafs. It's, you know, you can liken it to what's happening right now with the Suns, but it's even much, much, much more so Toronto and hockey. So if you have success in Toronto as a member of the Maple Leafs, it is
– you're a god.
You're a god in that city. You can literally do whatever you want. I think if he tastes that kind of success in Toronto, he will have a hard time leaving.
I agree with that.
If he doesn't, he is gone, because it's a miserable place to be if you're losing.
Yes, it is. To equate Toronto and hockey is like the Yankees in baseball or the Cowboys in football. It's that big there. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of things can happen. If Toronto continues to flame out and the pressure mounts on him, I could definitely see him walking. He loves it here. He genuinely loves it here. In fact, I think if you start searching the streets in Scottsdale in 2 days, you might spot Austin Matthews, because he'll be back here pretty quickly. He loves being here. So don't discount that possibility. And when it comes to money, I think he's the one guy that they will back up the Brinks truck for. They understand what he could mean to this franchise, not just because he's a great player, but because he's from this area. And let's not discount the ethnicity, too, as a marketing tool for this franchise.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think, you know, people have been dreaming about this moment since the ping pong balls came up, you know, the wrong way. It'd be great to see Austin Matthews in a Coyote jersey. I wouldn't lie. You know, it's a dream for everybody that's been involved with the franchise. We'll wait and see. And as far as Connor McDavid and Edmonton, a lot less pressure there. They could lose the next 10 years and they'd still love Connor McDavid. He'll still get the questions and he'll still have some pressure and some heat, but not the same as Matthews in Toronto. But make no mistake, if they continue to lose, they will try to upgrade. And the only piece they have to move right now, well, I guess they have Leon Draisaitl. You could get a heck of a package. If at one point in hockey, Wayne Gretzky can get traded, anybody can get traded. And so I it wouldn't surprise me to see Connor McDavid at some point moving out of Edmonton.
Yeah, I just feel like at some point too with McDavid, he's going to get so frustrated with this because he is. If he's not the best player in the world on any given night, it's Nathan MacKinnon, and McDavid's right there. And really, McDavid probably is the best player in the world most nights. So I just think at some point he's going to start wanting to win some games too. We got a question from Greg about what it would take to get Matthews from Toronto for Arizona. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking that the best way to approach this is if he's a free agent, that's your chance. You're not prying him away right now.
Right.
Let's go with, okay, we got a couple questions about specific players. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this guy's name right, but Bierce. I think his name is Bierce. Yeah. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Any sense to making a run at Landeskog in free agency?
That's an interesting question to me. He's going to be a free agent. I think the Coyotes need leadership, that sort of leadership in their dressing room. But I don't know. Is Landeskog really going to leave in the end? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, PD? That was an interesting question to me.
Do I think he's leaving the Colorado Avalanche if they have success this year? I say no. I don't know their cap situation. I know they've had an unbelievable value for him over the last several years. He deserves to get paid, and he will get paid. Right now, what's his base salary this year is 6.5, and his cap hits just over 5.5. He's going to get paid. Like I do not see him being a guy that leaves Colorado, especially with the success they're having right now. We've talked about cup windows are so short. This may be, you know what, they may win a cup this year. They may be in the finals this year. I don't see them breaking up that big three at this point. They're going to have to pay him. And then you know what? You sign him, and then if the window closes, you trade him. But you're going to have to sign him in Colorado.
Well, we just got a bunch more questions in as we were doing this. let's see. Okay.
Let's go. I thought I had a 9 a.m. cutoff, but yeah.
Well, and it's 9 a.m. Hawaiian time, though, right? For most of our audiences.
Not Des Moines?
No. It's 9 a.m. tomorrow in Des Moines. Mitch writes in, as a team that is most likely going to be in need of some players with potential offensive skill, do you think a player like Josh Hosang could be a potential target as someone you could probably get for cheap? Because there has not been very much NHL experience.
Petey?
I mean, maybe. Again, it's going to go back to what direction is this Coyote team going to take? I mean, Hosang fills a role and a need. Is it the role that's going to fit into which direction this team is going? I know if it was a Rick Tocchet coach team, he probably doesn't fit in. But I don't know what kind of a coaching staff they're going to bring in or what kind of direction they're going. Does he provide some offense and some skill? He does. I don't necessarily think he's a guy that this team will go after.
I think the spirit of the question too, if you just take any specific player's name out and you just say, you know, a player like that has some potentially offensive upside, do you maybe take a flyer on him? I think that's something that a team looking for skill is certainly looking at. I just don't know about that specific player because, as Petey said, you don't know who the coach is yet.
At a guy that's been out of the league for a little while, and I don't know. I don't know. I don't think the answer is, do I think he will be there? No. Do I think that's the type of player? Yes. Him specific? No. Joshua Sang won't be a Coyote.
Ogie Oglethorpe, if you had to guess today, who are the four exposed to Seattle? For me, it's Labushkin, Pitlick, Fisher, and Aiden Hill. That's for Ogie. That's not for me. I haven't looked at this yet.
That's a fair list. I still haven't done this because I'm resisting the urge to do the protected list until I know what's happening with this team. So
yeah.
And the issues we talked about before, because we've talked about the protected list a lot, it's really, do you put more value in a, you know, putting people on this list that you don't think will get claimed, i.e. Clayton Keller, whose salary is so large that he might probably would not get selected because you're not going to take Clayton Keller's numbers at what he's making. Or do you put a Christian Fisher on and have the potential of him being taken, or Lawson Krause, or Michael Bunting for that matter? I don't know. It's going to be a really tough philosophy. And it goes the same thing with the goaltending, Aiden Hill and Kemper. Hill played like he is the future here. Maybe not 21, 22, but, you know, 23, 24, Aiden Hill is probably going to be your guy. So do you protect him now and have the opportunity of Kemper being gone. These are really, really hard philosophical questions for the organization on what direction they're going. If it's all about next year, you keep Darcy Kemper. But if you're talking about the length of the, you know, when the window will open, we always talk about the window, it's not next year. So you open it for Hill and you protect Hill. Tough choices coming up for this management. And again, it's a one-man management team. I don't know how they're going to make all these decisions.
I think you go out and you trade for Timo Polkinen, right? So you can re-expose yeah. him and have Sam.
How the hell did he – how is he the guy that got picked, Pokemon? I worked for the team and I didn't know who he was. And he was the guy that got picked.
Plan, right before the expansion draft, I'm going to look at every team and sort of assign a grade of blame for them for making Vegas into an instant competitor. I think the Coyotes may get the least amount of blame.
At last. I'm not kidding. We didn't know who he was. Like he was there so short and he had such a little impact on our franchise. Again, nice person, but as a hockey player, he had little impact. He was like, that's who we lost in the expansion draft. You're utter surprise. So you don't know what Seattle's thinking. They may be looking at a piece for their minor league team, honestly, because they've got so many picks, or they may be picking a guy here that somebody else wants so they can make a trade. There are so many moving parts when it gets to the expansion draft. And just because you expose somebody clearly doesn't mean they're going to get taken. The defenseman we've all talked about, Labushkin's probably going to be the guy that's going to be exposed on the back end. Does that mean Seattle is going to take him? I would think it's unlikely. And I don't think Christian Fisher is going to get taken by this Seattle Kraken. I don't think he's a guy that they're going to look at as fitting into what they want to do out of the gate. Could be Adin Hill. Yeah, I think if he's exposed, I could see Seattle making a run at Adin Hill.
Let's do three more because otherwise we're going to be here all day. And I'll start. This is another question you always get, Craig, but this is a Coyotes fan in Germany. So I'm going to ask the question. Wow. Any specific reasons, like skating or defensive behavior, known why Westerlund did not get an ELC?
I don't think it was skating. Defensive behavior probably played into it. I just don't think they thought he was enough of an impact player at the NHL level when they projected. So,
And then from Tim, he asked a few questions, and we've answered some of them throughout the show. But he says, follow up on the sportsbook question Craig was looking into, which I don't even think I know what that question is.
I'm still looking into it, so I can't answer that one.
That sounds like that would have been my guess if Craig wasn't here. I would have said, Craig's just going to tell you he's still looking into it. That would have been my answer. No, but the second one is there a trade market for Kemper? And then he suggests Philadelphia or Toronto.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wonder how much Darcy's hurt his trade value, not only with the way he came back. And yeah, he said he wasn't fully healthy, so that impacts it. But he hasn't played well at the World Championship either. So I don't know. I do wonder what that trade market looks like, if they'll look at this, you know, this sort of half season and say his game's fallen off, or if they'll look at the last several years and say he's still an elite NHL goaltender.
You know, in January, you would have said absolutely he is the MVP of this team before they dropped the puck on game one. He's the guy. You could trade him. I'm not sure now, but there are teams that have looked at goalies and go, okay, he's done it before. We can turn him back to that again. You've seen it when the Coyotes picked up Devan Dubnyk. It was a guy that was in the minors, and you've turned him back into a player for a short period of time for Minnesota. So there will be teams interested. Unfortunately for the Coyotes and Coyote fans, he's not going to demand the return that he would have demanded back in January or prior to the season starting. And at that point, they didn't trade him because they didn't get the value they wanted. So they sure as heck aren't going to get the value they want for him now. You're not getting a first-round pick for Darcy Kemper right now. It's just not going to happen. And to Craig's point, he goes over to the World Championship. Maybe if he's lights out there and carries Canada to a gold medal on his back, he can get a little bit more of his swagger back and, again, rise in the trade value. It's not going to happen. Okay. This team needs high draft picks or prospects that are ready to play now, and Darcy Kemper is not going to demand that right now.
Seth writes in asking if there's a way to get Seth Jones from Columbus. We all wish, but that's not not for the Coyotes. Nonlinear donut ball delivery has pretty extensive questions about the expansion draft. We'll get more into the expansion draft when we get through these playoffs. We'll do like an expansion draft show. So let's close on Los Coyotes Steve. Last month, Elliot Friedman suggested on 31 Thoughts that Arizona was considering a possible buyout of Schmaltz. I actually liked parts of the season last year, and while I do believe we have too many similar smaller players, I still think Schmaltz has value. Thoughts?
Okay, so I want to correct Los Coyotes Steve.
Elliot Friedman did not suggest that they were buying out Nick Schmaltz. What he said is he heard this crazy rumor and it's not going to happen. They're not buying out Nick Schmaltz. That's not being considered.
Good, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense given the situation everybody's in.
So, all right. I had a question, and it goes back to the question that didn't get answered by Nonlinear. We talked about what are the rules for the expansion draft, and what, I don't know the rules for buying out or the expansion draft. I'll know them by the time I need to. But are we supposed to know everything about everything, Craig? Is that part of the deal of this podcast? Like, are we supposed to be that learned that we know all of this stuff?
I mean, oh, no. You just need to sound like you know.
Yeah. Okay. Good grief. Because Nonlinear, I read the question from Nonlinear. And I go, oh, my gosh, I better learn the CBA because I clearly don't know it. But I should probably learn these rules.
Like in those instances, I read up on that stuff right before it's relevant.
Okay.
So much information, like you take it in initially. But you don't remember because you're
not. Because the buyout rules have changed, right? Like buying all players, the rules to that have changed in the most recent CBA. So I don't know what the rules would be to even buy out Schmaltz. But no, the answer is I absolutely know. And do they hope he becomes what they are paying him for? Absolutely they do. And again, the entirety of his time here in Arizona, he is a guy that shows you glimpses of greatness. And when I say glimpses, I mean you're like, shake your head, wow, great, with speed and skill and getting to that and shot. It is unfortunately few and far between those moments for Nick Schmaltz right now. Either it's between injuries or he doesn't play to that level of, consistently. That will be his issue. If he could ever find it where he could play that way consistently, he's going to be a very, very good hockey player for this team. If he can't find it, you're going to look at a guy that's just okay, because when he's good, he's really good. And when he's not, he's not.
That toe drag shot he pulled off, I don't remember who it was against towards the end of the season. If he could just do that like every three games, I think he'd be just fine in this league. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to Steve Peters. Thanks to Craig Morgan. You can blame Craig Morgan for all the Coyotes news that breaks in the next week or so. I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.